You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, the federal government rejected the Dakota Access Pipeline route. We'll find out why some activists still aren't ready to celebrate.
First, if you've ever gotten stuck on a negative emotion for hours or days or longer, or if you do your best to completely ignore those negative emotions, our next guest says you're not doing yourself any favors.
She says our emotions, positive and negative, can give us a lot of useful information about where we are in life and help us in our relationships and our careers, but only if we know how to read them.
The key is something she calls emotional agility. And the good news, she says, we can learn it and we can practice it.
Susan David joins us now. She's a psychologist on the faculty of Harvard Medical School, and her new book is called Emotional Agility: Get Unstuck, Embrace Change, and Thrive in Work and Life. Susan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with your term, emotional agility. What is it?
So how we navigate our inner thoughts, our emotions, and the stories that we tell ourselves drive everything in our lives. How we parent, what jobs we apply for, how we live, our relationships, and so on. And emotional agility is effectively the ability to be with those thoughts, emotions, and stories in a way that allows us to notice them, to derive use from them, but also to not let them sabotage our ability to act in ways that are congruent with our goals and our values.
Let's talk about the opposite and the problem that we're solving here, the idea of emotional rigidity. What does that look like? What's going on in our minds when we're not emotionally agile?
So often people drive their behaviors with effectively their thoughts and emotions. So we get hooked into ways of being. For example, we might feel that we are being undermined in a meeting and therefore automatically shut down. Or our spouse says something and we walk out of the room. So emotional inagility is when our thoughts, our emotions, and our stories effectively call the shots, as opposed to other ways of being and acting that are more values congruent and more connected with how we truly want to be in the world.
It seems like there's a lot of emphasis in our culture today on the positive, on focusing almost exclusively on the positive. And sometimes there's that other aspect. If you focus on the positive, you attract the positive. And so as a result, it seems like sometimes we're not really supposed to acknowledge the negative stuff. What do you think about that?
So I think that this narrative in our culture is not serving us. I don't think it's serving our resilience. I don't think it's serving our well-being. If we look at, for example, that by 2030, the World Health Organization predicts that depression, not heart disease, not diabetes, not cancer, depression will be the leading cause of disability globally, it is frightening. And this narrative, I believe, around let's just be happy, we can all choose our happiness, let's be positive all the time, I think that in many ways that actually undercuts our ability to be resilient. And I'll give you an example. We know that life's beauty is inseparable from its fragility. Things might be going well today, but we might be and are very likely in our lives to be beset by illness or job loss or things that are difficult. And unless we are able to actually be skilled at understanding, labeling, dealing with these negative experiences in a way that is true and real and that actually helps us, we're not likely to be effective. So there's a growing body of research, for example, showing that people who overly focus on trying to be happy and think positive actually over time become less happy. A friend of mine who recently died of stage 4 breast cancer said that for her, it felt like the tyranny of positivity, that she was ill and dying, and everyone around her kept on saying, just be positive, just be positive. And she said to me, you know, if it was just a case of being positive, the friends in my stage 4 breast cancer support group would be alive today. And by keeping on getting this messaging that I've just got to be positive, what it starts to do is it starts to almost blame me for my own death. So for many reasons, I think that this emphasis on being positive and being happy don't serve us and are just not true to the reality, which is that our so-called negative emotions are core to our evolutionary way of being in the world, and we need to learn how to be effective with them.
We're talking to Susan David. Her new book is called Emotional Agility. And you write, Susan, that we're not just born with or without emotional agility. We can learn it. We can train in it. And you kind of lay out steps to figuring out our emotions, building a better relationship with them. Step one, you say, is showing up. What do you mean by that?
So often when people are experiencing difficulties, they do one of two things. The first is bottling. Bottling is where people push emotions aside. They'll say something like, I'm unhappy in my job, this relationship isn't going well, but at least I've got a job or a relationship, so I'm just not going to think about it. On the other hand, we can often do what looks like the opposite, which is to brood. And brooding is where we get so immersed in our difficult experiences. Why am I feeling what I'm feeling? This is terrible. This is awful. That we struggle to move forward. Now, what's fascinating is that even though bottling and brooding look so different, both of them are associated with lower levels of well-being, higher levels of depression, higher levels of anxiety over time. So one of the first things that I talk about in emotional agility is that even though there is this cultural narrative around being positive and being happy, that it's really important to show up to our difficult experiences by not trying to jostle with them, not trying to argue with whether we should or shouldn't have them, I should be happy, I shouldn't be happier, but to rather end any struggle that we have internally by dropping the rope, to notice our thoughts and emotions with compassion and curiosity and see what surfaces for us.
So if I'm having a negative emotion, you say I should just acknowledge that, you know, I'm having this negative emotion and I'm going to see what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, difficult emotions, our emotions are data. Our emotions, even the more difficult emotions, have evolved to help us to survive as a species and to shape our behavior. And so while our so-called negative emotions are not directions, they are still data. They are data, not directions. And so often beneath our difficult emotions are signs to things that we care about. I've never met someone with depression who isn't at some level concerned about how do I better be in the world? Someone who is maybe a guilty parent who isn't at some level concerned about presence and connectedness with their children, or whose idea has been stolen at work, who isn't concerned about issues of equity and fairness. So often beneath our difficult emotions are signs to things that we value. And if we can pay attention to those data, not directions, we start being able to surface things that are truly meaningful and important and to use that information in critical ways in our lives.
So once we identify those emotions, that kind of takes us to our next step, which you call stepping out. And you reference a point that we are not Mr. Spock from Star Trek with a completely dispassionate view, but we can kind of try to be and say, why? What is this emotion? What does it mean? How do we kind of step outside our emotions and analyze, as you say, what information they're trying to give us?
So absolutely. You know, so often when we are hooked, when we are emotionally inagile, we are being driven by our emotions and thoughts. And so stepping out is really this capability that we all have to really discern, you know, who's in charge here, the thinker or the thought? Who's in charge, the emotion, the fear that's telling me to not apply for a job or to shut down or to be angry, or me, the person who is big enough to experience all of my emotions? And all of your listeners will have had this experience of, say, being really angry with a customer service agent and wanting to yell down the telephone, and simultaneously having that ability to helicopter above their thoughts and emotions and saying to themselves, I feel really angry, but yelling is going to get me nowhere. So there are key ways, and in emotional agility, I describe some of these as to how we can develop the skill set. I can give two quick examples.
Sure.
The first is that so often when we experience difficult emotions, we might use very broad brushstrokes to describe how we're feeling. So we'll come home from work and we'll say, oh, I was stressed today. I was stressed. And the next day, how was your day? I was stressed. There is a very big difference between being stressed versus disappointed, stressed versus angry, stressed versus I thought I would be in a different place in my career or in my life. And what we know from the research is that people who say to themselves, what are two other options? What are two other things that I might be experiencing here? Become more able to really look at and be effective with their emotions. And we know that when people are more nuanced, not using these very broad brushstrokes, that it enables them to have, again, better levels of psychological health, but it also activates what is called the readiness potential in our brains. If I know that the real reason I'm stressed is because I thought that I'd be in a different place in my career, what it starts to do is it starts to actually shape our capacity to set goals in that area. So that's the first way that we can start to step out. A very quick second way is that so often when we are angry, we say to ourselves, I am angry, I am stressed, I am anxious. And what we're doing when we do that is we are effectively identifying 100% of who we are with that emotion. I'm angry, I'm stressed. And a very simple strategy, which all of your listeners can use, is to simply notice the thought or feeling for what it is. I'm noticing the thought that I'm being undermined. I'm noticing the feeling that I'm angry. Now, it sounds really simplistic, but what that starts to do is it starts to create space between you and the action that you take, this very critical pause that we as human beings need to be able to cultivate.
We're talking to Susan David. Her new book is Emotional Agility, Get Unstuck, Embrace Change, and Thrive in Work and Life.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about emotional agility and how we can build it in ourselves? Do you feel like you've been guided by your emotions for better or worse? Do you feel like you've gotten better at understanding your own emotions over the years? What did you do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking about emotional agility with Susan David. She says we can learn a lot from our emotions and use them as signposts in our lives instead of getting locked into long-term negative emotions.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Again, 800-642-1234. Have you gotten hooked into negative messages about yourself? Have you broken out of that? Do you bottle up emotions or brood over them? Do you have questions about how emotional agility works? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take our first caller right now. We've got Joe joining us in Watertown. Joe, hi.
Hi. I just came to a new thought when I was listening. The guest mentioned the nuanced thought and how that connects to our the theory on the brain. I forget the terms you mentioned, readiness, I think, for the brain. Now, I wonder if the guest has ever looked at or is interested in looking into what we discussed a lot here about politics and how people get worked up emotionally over the so-called fake news and other news sites that have spread a lot of stuff that gets people angry and very emotional. And I found that interesting when you mentioned the word nuanced, because we always think of nuanced thought versus some of the quite non-nuanced thought that you see people is when they espouse a quick thing they see online, and it's a generalization, maybe something like, you know, all these illegals are taking our jobs or something like that, and they walk around with a simple thought process and an anger behind that, and that the nuanced thought is not there. And that could be partly why people that properly vet and then do the research and are more educated are not getting this emotion, because they're putting it into proper proportion.
Joe, thanks for that comment. Appreciate it. And Susan, he's kind of getting there at sort of seeing things as black and white or binary. You're mad or you're not mad. Things are going well or they're not. And you're tying into politics there. But is there something to the complexity of emotions and being able to see them in different ways?
Absolutely. I think that was just a brilliant question. And it is something that I talk about in emotional agility, how as human beings, we are so often drawn to what in psychological terms is called premature cognitive commitment. The idea that we very quickly want to put ourselves and other people in categories. So sometimes we do this in ways that don't really impact us. You know, I don't eat from mezes in Turkey. We create a little story about ourselves and it becomes comforting. But of course, we see this in more pernicious ways when it comes to quickly putting people into boxes, stereotypes, categorizations, and so on. And we know absolutely that one of the ways that we become more effective as human beings is to start trying to dig out a little bit more. So to move away from this idea that I am just the first thing that I think and to really open our hearts and our minds up to being more curious. One of the things that I actually talk about in the book, and I think it relates absolutely to this question as well, and it's fairly frightening, is how us as human beings, how we are comforted by narratives that we hear time and time again. And so what happens is when there is a narrative, even if that narrative is fake, even if that narrative doesn't serve us, when we hear something time and time again, our brains start to see that narrative as being, therefore it is truthful, and therefore it's something that I should act on. And so in emotional agility, I talk about how people get even sucked into comforting relationships that don't serve them or comforting jobs that they've been in for years and years and years but that are going nowhere. So yes, we absolutely construct these narratives. We are often bound by them, and the only way we can start becoming more effective is when we start recognizing them for what they are and start trying to surface our values. How do I really want to be in the world? How do I want to come across? Is this narrative something that is congruent with the way I truly want to live my life?
Talking to Susan David about her new book, Emotional Agility. Back to our callers now with Aiden in Green Bay. Aiden, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about, Aiden?
I wanted to just personally leave a comment as far as my personal experiences go. I'm actually just turned 19 years old. Started my freshman year of college, and I've been in therapy for 6 or 7 years for a lot of just rough stuff at home. And one of the things, we didn't call it emotional agility, we called it like resiliency, but, you know, being able to intelligently handle your emotions, I feel like has changed my life significantly. I mean, to a point where I feel like overall I'm a much better person. In fact, I just found out today that my dog is, the ACL tear that we thought she had is actually an advanced form of cancer, and so that has to be my finals week. So, you know, being able to handle that appropriately, I think, is just, you know, a skill that just, I think, I wish it was taught more in school, you know, along the way, because it's so completely invaluable.
Aiden, thanks for sharing that. I'm glad you're feeling like you're dealing better with emotions. Sorry about your dog. Good luck with that, and good luck with finals week. But Aiden saying, Susan, this is a skill, and it's made a big difference for him in dealing with these, in learning these emotional skills.
Yeah, these are critical skills. I mean, these skills drive every single aspect of our lives. And I, firstly, you know, congratulate Aiden for the grace and courage and dignity that it takes to, you know, recognize that you maybe aren't dealing with something as effectively and to start to cultivate some of the capacity in this area, because so much of it is learnable. The other thing that I just wanted to say in relation to his comment about it being taught, I could not agree more. When we start seeing the rates of depression, anxiety, and difficulty and how these are growing exponentially in young children and in young adults, It's frightening. I recently wrote an article, or was interviewed for an article in the New York Times called Teaching Your Child Emotional Agility. And in it, what I speak about is how so often as parents, we want to, you know, protect our children from difficulties. And we'll run in and try to save them from difficulties, what I call emotional helicoptering. And yet the only way as children we can start to develop skills around emotions is by being allowed to experience difficulty, by being encouraged to label our emotions, by being encouraged to think about our values and what's important to us, and by being encouraged to shape our behaviors and choose actions. One, you know, very beautiful quotation that's been attributed to Viktor Frankl and that I talk about in emotional agility, especially in the context of raising children, is this idea that between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space lies our power to choose. And it's in that choice that comes our growth and freedom. And so often in everyday life, at work, at home, from when we're younger to when we're older, we respond on autopilot. And emotional agility is effectively this ability to be compassionate and kind with ourselves, but to also recognize that our emotions don't need to call the shots, to create that space, to be able to create that learning and growth. This is critical.
Susan, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
I am so grateful to be here. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Susan David, psychologist on the faculty of Harvard Medical School and the author of the new book, Emotional Agility, Get Unstuck, Embrace Change, and Thrive in Work and Life. And we have a link to her Emotional Agility quiz over on the Central Time Facebook page.
Didn't have a chance yet to go and take the quiz. I think I'll do it. And when you go to find that link, tell us if you have a story, if you were raised or brought up your kids to try to deal with their emotions in the way our guest is talking about. If you've made a change in your life along those lines, if you want to share, you can even tell us how you did on the quiz. I don't know if it's graded A, B, C, or what, but let us know.